Again, I'm Connie Willis, and you can find me outside here of Coast on a Blue Rock Talk with Connie Willis. It's my YouTube channel. Please go and subscribe. I'd love for you to join me and become a Blue Rocker. Also, all the other social medias, Blue Rock Talk. And as in terms of Coast to Coast, I'm going to be back on Christmas Eve. I'm going to have Bishop James Long, and we're going to talk about the miracles of Christmas. And also how those of you that want to understand, you want to understand those miracles of the Christmas and how some of the things that you've seen kind of fit into it. So he's really open about that and does his best to help you out. So he's going to be there, and we're going to probably have some little milk and cookies kind of thing. I mean, he's a joy. If you don't know anything about Bishop James Long, it should be a lot of fun. And New Year's Eve, I'll be talking to you too here on Coast to Coast, and we'll be talking about the past predictions from last year to see if they've panned out this year. And if you want to know any more information about who's going to be on and what's going on, well, tomorrow night I want to remind you that David Schrader is going to be back. He's back, a married man. He's coming back, and he's going to be talking Charles Manson. That's all here coming up for you tomorrow night and later throughout the year before the year's up here on Coast to Coast AM. We are back, and we are talking here with Mark Sargent on Coast to Coast AM. Connie Willis here talking about Flat Earth and Antarctica. Mark, so I'm just trying to get the visual again. So the Earth is flat. There's edges. It doesn't go very deep. There is kind of an enclosure above us. Are we in orbit? Are we going around the sun and the moon? Or are we floating in some, like a bubble on top of the water?
No, it's easier. It's easier to even think of that. Think of it like, I mean, think of us like a terrarium on top of God's desk. So we are in a completely enclosed system, and I know the visuals are going to be a little tough on radio, but I'll try. Think of the Earth, if you took a globe and you put your hand on the North Pole and you squashed it. So the North Pole is at the center of the dinner plate, so it's as flat as the dinner plate. And all the other continents kind of splay out and look pretty much like they do now on a globe. The only exception would be Antarctica. Antarctica wouldn't and can't be this island continent sort of like Australia, and they're actually pretty similar in size. Antarctica would fit around the entire edge like a giant ice continent. And I know some people are fond of saying the ice wall, you know, the whole Game of Thrones type thing. But it is kind of similar. I mean, yeah, the Game of Thrones one was much taller, but the Antarctic continent is like that. I mean, again, it's a 200-foot sheer wall of ice right up, you know, from the water. And then most of the continent is at least 2 miles up in altitude. It's plateau. It's an amazing continent. And then you have, you know, a dome-like structure over the top of it, a firmament made out of, and I'm using the biblical term firmament, but, you know, a dome made out of, I don't know, heavy elements, heavy water, high frequency, electromagnetic field. Take your pick. I don't think it's glass, but that's what we're covered with. And it's fairly shallow by comparison. That's why I like using the sports stadium as a comparison, because a sports stadium, you know, is very, very wide, but it doesn't have to be very high. That sort of kind of helped.
Right. No. So, and how, is there a way that we can prove it to ourselves? I mean, you know, people would say, hey, we've been out to space, we've been on the moon. How can you say, you know, this is how we can prove it?
Oh, yeah. By the way, and the sun and the moon would be inside.
It would be. Okay.
Yeah, the sun and the moon would be inside. No different than a planetarium. And I know it dates me because, you know, I used to go to planetariums back in the day. You know, the planetariums are the place most kids wouldn't know what they were. On
I
weekends,
think they're cool.
They would do things like laser Pink Floyd and
laser.
Or you'd lay on your back and they'd crank up. And these are the same display systems that would display stars on a weekday. Yeah. Would do lasers at Led Zeppelin on a weekend. And I mean, it's the same system. You can project anything you want up there in the sky. Stars, comets, the moon. We can do in planetariums now just about anything you can think of in the nighttime sky. So the sun and the moon are inside the structure, or at worst case, just outside the structure with us, kind of spinning around like a yin-yang symbol. you know, where the everyone knows the yin yang symbol, you know, it's the sun and the moon type thing, kind of spinning around the top of us. Very, very small, very, very close. Human beings are notoriously bad at determining size and perspective. So the sun isn't 93 million miles away, and the moon isn't 237,000 miles away. They're almost the same size, and that's why the eclipse works the way they do. People know it's like, hey, the moon fits right in front of the sun, and we've always thought, oh, what a great coincidence. It's like, yeah, it's coincidence. The moon is 400 times more narrow than the sun, and it's 400, exactly 400 times closer. Oh, that does work out, doesn't it? It's not a coincidence. It's all part of the same system.
Well, I've seen
So,
the space shuttle go up, I don't know, maybe 10,
oh
12
no, I'm
times.
not
Where do they
space, by the
go?
way.
Where, what's
No,
going on? What's happening?
to use the Tom Cruise line from Mission Impossible, it's worse than you know. It's not. I'm not just saying that NASA faked all the missions and every space agency fakes missions. I'm saying that the only reason NASA was created in the first place was to keep this thing under wraps. So the rockets are built, and people say, "Oh no, it can't be." You're talking about every person that's ever worked in a NASA factory or any one of the other space agencies. They've got to be in on it. It's like, no. The only if you're 99.99% of anybody in the space program aren't in on it at all. Ignorance is bliss, and if you compartmentalize everything, it works out really, really well. The only people that have to know are the telemetry guys, aka the Capricorn One movie scenario, where all the wrench turners, everyone that builds the rockets, hey, that's great. The astronauts don't go on top of the rockets; they just ditch them in the ocean somewhere. Which is why, when you look at the time lapse thing of the rockets, they never go straight up. They go almost horizontal within the first 100 miles.
Well, that's true.
And
They do.
if you're looking for escape velocity, you gotta go up. You don't go horizontal. That's not the way it goes. And that's how it's worked so far. It's been a great kept secret for a long time. Let me throw a quick stat out for you. Once everything started happening in Antarctica, the first thing men would do, you know, this is what men do, is try to punch through it. Look up high altitude nuclear testing from 1958 to 1962, when the United States and the Russians, for 4 years, all they did was fire atomic weapons straight up. All they did. They didn't do ground tests, they didn't do water tests, they just did air tests for 4 years. After the third shot in 1958, NASA was formed. So after the first three shots, which were all heavy megaton shots, you know, 2 and 3 megatons, which was hard to come by in the late 1950s, NASA was formed because that's what you would do. You would militarize space, and you would make sure that private companies were delayed as long as possible from going up there. And then in 1959, NASA announced the Van Allen radiation belts, which was a little bit of a giveaway, where they said, oh yeah, the Van Allen radiation belts, super, super deadly. No one should ever go up there. The same year that Antarctica treaty was put into place. No coincidences. You seal off the upper edge and the outer edge simultaneously, one quietly, one publicly, because most people don't want to go in Antarctica anyway. But that also keeps the private companies, the big companies, remember, because NASA is just accumulation of parts from the big military contractors like Boeing and General Dynamics and Lockheed Martin and those guys. You don't want those companies teaming up and saying, oh, we're going to do our own space program, because sooner or later, you've got to take the picture. Which is also another thing. I know I'm jumping around a bit, but there's a lot to cover and not a ton of time, which is why did it take them so long? NASA was founded in 1958. Why did they wait all the way until 1972 to take the first blue marble shot? They was literally the last mission, Apollo 17. What happened to Apollo 8 through Apollo 16? They had gone to the moon and back 6 times, and they wait till literally the last mission, and they already knew in advance it was the last mission on the way home to take that first picture. And then they waited 43 years. It's two generations between pictures. And they only asked because our group told them. Like, look, where's the pictures? Where's the videos of the Earth rotating on its axis with the weather morphing? Where is any picture of any astronaut, any video of any astronaut outside a space capsule turning 180 degrees or further? Where are all these things? They're not there. People automatically lean on the space programs and say, I can prove that it's a globe through the space programs. Really try. Spend some time looking through the NASA archives. We fill in the gaps with science fiction. We fill in the gaps with movies that we've done from the 50s up until now. Most notably, 2001, A Space Odyssey, Stanley Kubrick. That's how it started off, which was released a year before Apollo. It's just amazing the chain of events that has happened between then and now. It's Strike me, but it's
It's
go
funny
ahead.
how, oh, go ahead.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
Well, it's funny that, you know, when you say, hey, why don't we have these pictures where, you know, they show everything, you know, the 360 degrees, where a lot of people would say, oh, it's because there's UFOs looking at them from the back. And you're saying, no, it's because it's the flat Earth. So it is interesting to hear that, you know, you got a whole different take on it.
I feel bad for Richard Hoagland. I know he's coming to the end of his long and storied career, and he was supposed to debate me last year, and it is one of the few things that does not dovetail into flat Earth, which is the secret space program. The two cannot exist simultaneously. And even if, and I know people say, well, see, because coast to coast, secret space program, totally real. If it was real, then we'd have even more pictures, because secret space program could take pictures just as easy. But and then they just wouldn't, you know, then they could say, oh no, Apollo took this, or Mercury took this, or Gemini took this. But there's no pictures, literally 43 years. And we knew this, it was confirmed because Obama did a speech on it, Neil deGrasse Tyson tweeted it, NASA tweeted it in two summers ago. And they said, oh yeah, by the way, the second blue marble ever taken to space. It's like, what are you talking about? You guys have been sending probes out there supposedly for decades. You can't tell me that you went 43 years without taking a second picture of Earth. It's just it's they've drugged their heels for as long as they could, but unfortunately, the limited technology that has been allowed to the general public has started to catch up with them. Most notably, high-speed internet, social media, way better camera technology. If you want something to prove you want to get your good jump start on how to prove the flat Earth on the ground, go get a camera. This is what most people, and this had nothing to do with the clues. People just came up with this on their own. Go to a beach and find an object that is off in the distance and take a picture of it, or a movie, it doesn't really matter. And then judge how much far it is, and then do the calculations for yourself. The curvature of the Earth, if you believe mainstream science, is 8 inches per mile squared, which means, not scary math, this is algebra, every mile times itself times 8 inches. So if it's 2 miles, it's 2 times 2 is 4 times 8 is 32. 3 times 3 is 9 times 8 is 72 inches, and so on and so on. It gets steeper and steeper because remember, if it's a globe, it's got to eventually go vertical. And we found that you can look at objects that are, I don't know, 100, 150 miles away, and you can see them. The camera technology has gotten so much better. The cheapest one out there is probably the Nikon P900 with 83 power zoom. You can bring ships. It's like, okay, ship goes over the horizon. You can't see it with your naked eye anymore. Crank up the zoom. There's the ship. You know, let it go. Crank it up again. You can bring it back in again. 40, 50, 70 miles with a boat right on the water. That's impossible if it's a globe. Impossible. Because once, as you know, once it goes over the other side of the hill, I don't care what you got. You could have the biggest telescope in the world. You shouldn't be able to bring that boat back into frame. And you always can. To where now I put the challenge out to any scientist. I go, show me an object at 150 miles or less, because after, you know, that the atmosphere gets so thick, it's like looking through water, which is pretty much like what we're breathing anyway. That,
Is the
go ahead.
well is as there you're right, we don't have enough time to talk about all this stuff. We could do this for a long time. Is the illu Oh no, is the illusion so much that when we hear that people have sailed around the planet or flew around the planet, do we just have such an illusion, and everybody has such an illusion that they did that? Or how can you explain if someone said,
Oh
hey,
yeah.
I
Oh
sailed
no,
around or flew around the planet?
that's easy. Whether it be Magellan or somebody in a 777 taking a flight around the world, if the world is a dinner plate and the center is the North Pole, I move my finger around the dinner plate, you know, in a complete circle. I've technically gone around the dinner plate. Does that mean the dinner plate's a ball or a sphere? No, it doesn't. In fact, compasses work the same way. The magnetic north is still the center of the plate. All the instruments work pretty much the same way. The only one that's in question, of course, is the GPS, which was designed by the United States military, DOD, in the mid-90s. So, like the Matrix, the GPS system is going to tell you what it wants to tell you. And so it will turn those planes very, very slowly to the right or to the left, where are you going? But the distance is so great, no pilot would ever notice it. So we want to believe it because it's what we've been told. Again, you see the globe in your classroom, it's told this is your home. Children don't believe in lies. They don't. Why would they? And since and don't feel bad. I know people are going, you know, it's like, no, I've never been punked. You cannot punk me. It's like, no, you were born into this. This is before you and your parents and your parents' parents going back 20-something generations.
Yeah, and I totally get that. I totally get what you're saying. Hey, if you're taught something, that's what you think, that's what you believe, that's the way it is.
Yeah.
Well, so who built it?
Well, take your pick. It's only one of two answers. And that is a really advanced civilization, for you alien fans out there, an advanced civilization with tech that's way beyond us, or is it the handprint of God? Is it divine? Is it proof of intelligent design? Either way, you're kind of splitting hairs there, because honestly, if a giant golden spaceship landed in Antarctica and we filmed it, there's a lot of religious groups that would say, well, isn't that possibly could be, you know, minions of God? We don't know, but it's one of those two. I absolutely know it's not us that built it. We were just covering up for the last 60 years. In fact, we were so primitive, we didn't even know until about 1960. You know, remember, if you're the king of France in the 1500s, you have the map of the world. What are you going to do about it? You got wooden ships and horses. You can't do anything. It wasn't until the internal combustion engine came out, we got planes, that we could figure this thing out. And that's exactly what we did. I think we had the old maps, and that's why they sent them out there in the 1920s. Said, all right, find it. And up until the 1950s, they didn't know for sure. They were flying, can't find it, can't find it. Well, let's just give up. Let's just make money. And of course, Murphy's Law, the second they decided to do that, it's like, oh, okay, there it is.
Well, are we hiding it because, I mean, is the secret because just like keeping the secret of aliens, okay, because the world would freak out and it would change everybody's thought and perspective. Is that the same with the flat Earth?
Potentially, yes. A lot of people say, well, you wouldn't hide it. It's like, of course you would. Three quick tracks, academic, economic, and spiritual. Academically, astronomy and astrophysics would close down tomorrow. Those doors wouldn't open. All the remaining sciences, biology, archaeology, geology, hydrology, they would all have to retool from the ground up, no play on words there. Then economically, you'd have to shut down world markets for a month. Spiritually, you would, you know, you're also talking about potentially proof of God. And there's a lot of religious institutions out there that would want some vengeance, even though that's not very religious of them, want vengeance on science. Science is not going to take that chance. The narrative is too far. It's too far along. They've told people this for too many generations now. They can't go back on it. They're going to protect themselves. And that's what they, you know, no science. If somebody else had found it, yeah, maybe. But as you know, somebody finds a substitute for petroleum. What's the first thing that happens? Oil and gas companies contact them. They say, look, we want to buy you out. So they offer them two briefcases. You know, one has the money in it, one has a gun in it. They say, you choose. With something like this, there is no choice. They weren't going to take the chance. What is there a possibility that people would riot in the streets? Maybe, but, you know, with pitchforks and torches. I don't know why it's always pitchforks. But
you are into the movies, by the way. I got to say, your references to the movies are perfect. And I gotta let you know this. You know, one of the treaties, of course, that people talk about, where it was like the alien treaty, and it was, when will disclosure come? And it will be, well, we're going to be preparing the world about this for disclosure by giving them all this information inside films, so it won't be such a big deal when disclosure finally happens. So it's interesting knowing that treaty, you know, and I believe in that particular treaty that I have read about myself, and you are constantly referencing it. And it's just funny to hear that, because you're kind of doing what this treaty said they were trying to do, to disclose truth.
This would, Flat Earth is one of those amazingly open-minded tests for people. I know hardcore conspiracy people listening to this show, they're hardcore conspiracy people. You bring up Flat Earth to them, they're going, get out of here. It's like, really? So, you know, the royal family being lizards, that's fine. But I bring up Flat
right.
Earth, and you tell me to get out of the room.
What's wrong what with you,
does?
Dude? Yeah.
Yeah.
Mark, I love it. Well, this is Mark Sargent that we're talking to. Great information. I'm loving hearing this Flat Earth and Antarctica. More information coming up on our last segment before the show is over. A lot of interesting stuff. So stay with us. Connie Willis here for Coast to Coast AM. It's the most listened to overnight radio program, North America, coast to coast AM. Hi, everybody. Connie Willis back here with Mark Sargent. We're talking Antarctica and flat Earth. So, Mark, when you talk about that the Earth is flat, squashed down from the North Pole, I like that. That's cool. The border is Antarctica all the way around. And then we've got this dome over it. Are we floating in space, or, like you said, we're on... You know, what do you think?
It's a fair question. Why would there have to be space, though? And again, it's because of the programming we all got as children, which is, look, if space can be faked, meaning like a planetarium. Remember, if you go inside, because I've had amateur astronomers come at me and say, look, I've seen the moons of Jupiter in my telescope, and I've seen the rings of Saturn in my telescope. I go, okay, fine. Take a pair of binoculars and go to a planetarium and look at Jupiter. Does the binoculars make Jupiter look more or less real? And I say, well, that's not really a fair test because I'm inside a building. And I say, yeah, that's my point. Who's to say when you don't walk out of that building, you walk outside, you're just not in a much, much bigger building. And what I mean by that is if the illusion is what 99.99% of the population believe, that's what you go with. You don't have to build space. You remember it was something Carl Sagan said a long time ago, which was he was always puzzled about if space had these giant endless fields of nothingness, you know, between us and Mars and our solar system and the next solar system, just nothing. There's just nothing out there. It's like, yeah, because they're such vast distances because we can't go anywhere. If you can fake space, then that's how what you do. You don't have there doesn't have to be space outside of this. And then of course your follow-up question is going to be, well, what is outside of this? If we're living inside some sort of big terrarium, some petri dish, then what is outside? And like, well, if it was me, there'd probably be more of these things. There's probably, you know, we're not, this is not a one-off. Not only are we not the only people who rent this apartment, there's probably more of these things outside. Why wouldn't you? Why would you build just one of them? There may be one that's, you know, in prehistoric era. There may be one that's far in the future.
Is there anything in the Old Testament? You know, I think you said something about something with the Old Testament. Is there anything in the Bible that tells us that? Is there anything written anywhere that says anything that anybody's found any type of proof anywhere else on walls in the caves, anything like that?
Well, I will say this, and I cover this, and I don't want to turn this necessarily into a chapter and verse show. There's a great website out there called testingtheglobe.com, which is not done by me. It's done by another guy, and he went through it with a fine-tooth comb every chapter and verse there is. And other than, you know, the first, let me throw out just a quick ones for you.
Sure. Genesis,
I think 1 verse 8, the firmament, which separates the waters above and the waters below. The story of Joshua, where Joshua supposedly asked God to hold the sun and the moon in the sky for an extra day so that he can slay more enemies. Really tough to do in an actual solar system, really easy to do in an enclosed system. How about the Tower of Babel? Tower of Babel, supposedly, you know, a giant structure leading to heaven, right? Well, if the Earth is spinning on its axis at 1,000 miles an hour and going around the sun at 60,000 miles an hour, where is that building going exactly? Going nowhere. It's going multiple places all the time. Unless you're in an enclosed system, which in case it's just trying to reach the ceiling. There's so many other little examples I could give, but here one of my favorites would be Wernher von Braun. His headstone. It's not a religious man necessarily. His headstone, very, very modest, says the year he was born, the year he died, and it says Psalms 19:1. I didn't know what it was. I had to look it up. Psalms 19:1, it says, and the firmament shows his handiwork. Why would the father of NASA, ex-Nazi rocket scientist, be talking about a domed structure from the grave? He never talked about that in his public life, but there it is. I mean, there's a lot of, but as far as what you're asking, here's a quick example for you, and I don't think I've said this in any other thing, which is as far as other worlds outside of this one. I don't know exactly the chapter and the verse, but I know the quote, and it is, my father's house has many, or my father's mansion has many rooms. And for me, that talks about, you know, that there's more than one world out there, that there's a whole bunch of worlds, but they are like ours, very condensed, like an egg crate type of thing. Eggs in an egg crate. How about that? Where they're right next to each other, but we can't get there and they can't get here, I don't think. Because some people, why the dome over the top? Some people say, why not? Why no? Why a dome at all? It's like, well, there's two schools of thoughts there. One, we could be a box of kittens that needs to be protected from what's outside of here, or we could be a box of scorpions that really shouldn't be allowed to run freely anywhere. And honestly, given our history, I'd kind of go with the latter. I'd think that we're a little bit too dangerous. We talked about that in science fiction movies for years. The most famous one being The Day the Earth Stood Still, where another race came and said, "Yeah, you guys aren't going to be allowed to explore because you just wreck everything." Mostly men. I give women a pass. Little
Well,
rebel.
what, how do you, that's okay. How do you explain meteorites? How do you explain stars in the sky? What about the astronauts?
Sure. Stars in the sky would be just part of the light system. Again, no different than a planetarium. Same thing with planets, just brighter lights. Meteors, well, comets are just another part of the light show anyway. Again, we can do comets in a planetarium. Meteors, throwing rocks into an aquarium. Just use a high velocity, whatever device you want, call it a rail gun, use a piece of metal ore, fire at a shallow trajectory, let the atmosphere do the rest with friction. Try not to aim in any major cities, which is why that one in Russia a few years back was a little dicey, but it didn't land like all the others. The rest of the stuff is pretty easy. And most of this would be an automated system on top of it.
I
You
was going
don't
to say,
need.
so yeah, is it non-human? It's kind of like we were talking about the cryptocurrencies, how it's, it's not run by, non-man, unmanned is what they say. Is it, because you don't think people are throwing rocks or you don't think humans are behind it, right?
No. The most of this would be an automated system, which works better in an enclosed circular system than it would be a sphere. No different. I mean, the jet stream in the upper atmosphere, automated system. The underwater conveyor system, which runs all the currents in the oceans. Even, and I know I catch some hell for this, even the magma system. Remember, if the deepest hole ever drilled is 8 miles, I mean, the magma system wouldn't be organic either. Say, well, no, volcanoes there, that have to be organic. Like, no, it wouldn't. Because remember, one super volcano and this show is over. The last thing you'd want to do is leave the magma system organic. So it's all part of a giant automated clockwork system. The sky, the stars and the planets in the sky are just part of a wonderful, elaborate, inspirational clock. And everything down below is to keep us acting naturally, which is, by the way, one other question I should throw in there before the end, which is why would the globe model be introduced at all? And I think the builders of this place helped introduce it because it buys them time. Look, we only became really interesting in the last 500 years as a civilization, and that's when this thing kind of was put into place by Copernicus. Back 500 years ago, it's like eventually you've got to get people away from the idea that there's an edge because we do love exploring. Human beings are very, very curious, more than cats, I think. And they love to reach the edge if possible. So what's the best solution for getting away from that? Tell them there is no edge. You can go around all you want. You're never ever going to find it. For most people, that's enough. It's like, oh yeah, I was told there's no edge. So there's nothing to explore. Sort of like the Truman Show. It's like, well, because he wanted to be an explorer. It's like, no, everything's already been discovered. That's all you tell people. It's like, no, everything's been mapped out. You don't have to look anymore. That reduces the most of the population from exploring anything. And of course, the subtle things like subtle design features, which I thought were really, really clever, adding 3% salt solution to the ocean limits ocean exploring by 90-something percent because you can't drink what you're sailing on. Remember, most of the early ship stuff was limited to how much fresh water you could carry. And there was a lot of ships that went down because of that. You can't, because human 3%, yeah, fish can still survive, but humans can't drink it. It's a fascinating look into it. I mean, people really should, again, when you're looking at this, treat it like a court case. Can you prove the globe in a court of law? Can you? And while you're at it, try to do it without using a space program like NASA. See if you can do it, because it's going to be tough. Let me use a quick quote from George Orwell, 1946. He wrote in a tribune over in England. He said, "It's an interesting responsibility about science." He was not a flat earther. He goes, "You go to the average person on the street, and you say, 'How do you know the Earth is a globe?' Everyone's first response is always the same. Well, we know, duh. Why are you even asking? And if you press it, they get angry." He goes, he was talking about the responsibility of science there. I thought it was more interesting because 1946 was 12 years before NASA was even founded. So how did everybody know before NASA was founded that it was a globe. How do you know it was a globe before NASA? It was because you were told, plain and simple. Everything else, a lot of things we can test, but we take science's word for it. We take it at face value. It's like, why would they lie to us? It's science. They would never
lie to us.
Well,
there's no question. In every classroom, there was a globe, without a doubt.
Yeah.
There was always a globe. Well, speaking of a globe, what about global warming? You know, people believe
that
in the
is,
global warming. Does this
oh
help
yeah,
that?
yeah.
Does
I,
that hurt that?
I,
How does that work with
I
that?
do. I do. From a flat Earth standpoint, an enclosed world system. In fact, it's even more dire in an enclosed world system. Think of it like this. An enclosed world, everything's compressed in here with us, the atmosphere, the whole nine yards. Remember, if it's an automated system, that system has to adjust to whatever's happening. And we've been generating a whole bunch of heat for the last 100 years. Remember, your car engine is just a furnace. That's all it is. And we have billions of them running all the time. And you're thinking, well, it doesn't make that much difference. I go, yeah, it does, not a month here and a month there. But over 100 years, as we keep making more and more of them, sure. It'd be no different than bringing a propane lantern into a car. Your car air conditioning system is going to have to compensate for the heat that thing is generating. Well, when that happens, you're going to run into, it's going to do weird things. It's going to blow really cold air on the people in front unless you have your adjust your vents. And I think we're seeing that all over the world right now, where the system is trying to adjust for the extra energy we're putting into it. And because of that, we're seeing erratic weather patterns. I mean, you want to call it global warming? Yeah. I mean, I know they've been kind of renaming it climate change, but look, I mean, most of the record temperatures this year, and I mean 90-something% of them, have been record highs. And I think it's just part of the automated system, and we're going to have to deal with this sooner or later, hopefully sooner.
Well, when you know, the sun's out, you feel that heat. It feels so good, you know. So they got this picture up there, and the sun feels pretty good.
I got a tan on Halloween Day, and I'm up in Seattle. That is never, ever happening before. It wasn't even close. It wasn't like, maybe I should go there or not. I mean, I was actually out there with a lawn chair and a towel, and I was baking. It was like 70-something degrees in Seattle. I've never seen a summer like this up here. It's really, really, really strange. So, yes, I do believe in climate change, global warming, whatever you call it, but it does fit into the enclosed world very easily.
I can see how it would fit in enclosed. I don't believe it otherwise, but that's a whole other show. So, listen, I want to ask you, how is it that people can find you?
People can find me. Easiest way is to just go into Google and type in Flat Earth Clues. That will take you eventually to my YouTube channel. It's Mark Sargent. It's my name. The community, though, is way bigger than me. And so I'll literally just go into YouTube, type in Flat Earth, and have fun, because there is a wall of content there, which I'm sure most of you didn't even know existed. And all my contact information is there, my email address, my phone, everything you need. And eventually you'll find what you need from it.
Yeah, if you haven't found his phone number on a 7-Eleven, a restroom, bathroom, or anything like that, you will find it on the internet. It's all over. It's plastered. I still think that's hilarious that it's out there. I was like, Mark, really? This is your number? But no.
I will keep that number out there until my phone becomes unusable. How's that?
Oh, I think it's great. I really do. I'm only smiling in a good way. So anything else you want to tell everybody as your last words here of what to look for that maybe we didn't talk about you'd like to say?
Don't take my word for it. Don't believe a word I say. In fact, don't. I'm going to use reverse psychology on you, and it's going to work. Do not Google Flat Earth, because do your own research and ask questions. The stuff I put that at the end of everything I do. Do your own research. Don't take anything I say at face value. Dig into it yourself. Try to prove the globe. See where it takes you. But it's not for the faint of heart. I got to warn you, it's Pandora's box. You open it, you're not going to be able to close it again.
But we do have humans that know about it. They know that this is flat, and they're keeping the secret.
People like me.
But no proof visually. Theory.
Nope.
Theory.
Nope. It's still a theory, but you see what I mean. It's been resonating. I mean, the fact that we had a conference, and there's in North Carolina, there's going to be another one in England here in the spring, which I'm speaking. I'm one of two Americans that's going to be speaking at it. It resonates. I'm telling you, it is a weird thing. You think it's absolutely ridiculous until you start looking in it, and then you'll be emailing me.
Well, I love the stuff that you put up. I love your clues. I really do. I think they're great, and they do give you something to think about. So I think I like that. So it's just funny. I know you said you're a conspiracy guy, and out of all the conspiracies out there, tough stuff and, you know, people that battle and debate over and over again, you just thought, I'm going to stick with Flat Earth and kind of go there for a while.
Yeah, I guess that's what I wanted to do. If you would have said 3 years ago, Flat Earth, I would have said, you're insane. And here I am, 160 interviews later.
Well, I appreciate you talking with us. I really do. It's nice talking to you, and you're very kind, very nice. It comes across, and it's a joy talking to you. And I'll be looking up your stuff. I'm subscribed to you.
Thank you very much for having me. It was an absolute pleasure.
Thank you. You take care, and we'll have you back, I'm sure, before long here on Coast to Coast. Thank you very much. And good luck tomorrow with the Flat Earth and the rocket going up.
Crossing my fingers. Thank you.
All right. Take care. Thank you very much. That was Mark Sargent with Flat Earth and Antarctica. A lot of interesting information. It was really neat because there's so many things that we've talked about here on Coast to Coast. And I know this has been talked about as well, but for me, I haven't talked about it. And to just learn something brand new that I never even thought about, you know, was very interesting. If you get a chance to go to his YouTube channel, check it out. And any of his other information, you can go to our website and you will find his links. And check out his information because it is really interesting to watch. And some things are kind of hard to look at and go, but his is joyful. He's got a lot of evidence that he puts behind it to prove his point. So it's very interesting. So I want to thank all of you for hanging out with us, and especially Stan Larimer, the godfather of BitShares, for joining us earlier tonight, as well as Mark Sargent with the Flat Earth and the Antarctica information. It was kind for them to give us their time, and I want to thank you guys as well for tuning in with me tonight, and I appreciate and hope that you enjoyed the show as much as me. If you did, please write it down. Let us know here at Coast. It's always nice to hear some good things. From the 840 WHAS studios of iHeartMedia in Louisville, Kentucky, many thanks going out to Greg Bishop, Bill May, Kirk Wesley, Tim Banal, Lex Lonehood, Stephanie Smith, Chris Burles, Dan Galante, Donna Walker, Tommy Danheiser, Sean Litasur. Nathan Staten will be back with us again here shortly. Lisa Lyon, George Knapp, and also George Norrie. Did that from out of my mind here. I didn't write that down. That was right from that was from the old noggin here. But until we meet again, please join me on Blue Rock Talk with Connie Willis, my YouTube channel. Subscribe and be be a part of it too. I appreciate that. Talk to you again Christmas Eve and New Year's Eve here on Coast to Coast. Until then, please keep watching the night skies and continue with me to seek out the strange and uncover the unknown. For Coast to Coast AM, I'm Connie Willis.